Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
With Penny
and,
oh yeah, it's a great show. I love that. Come on, heroes in a half shell, turtle pal.
We're ninja warriors.
I mean, all.
Wow. We are losers, too. The things you say while you're having a drink and then don't remember. What the hell were we singing Ninja Turtles for? I don't really know.
And right? Inspector Gadget.
And Inspector Gadget. Yeah, we went down our own wormhole of oldness. What's up, everybody? It's Chris Sims. Chris Sims Unbuttoned. This is Old Man Fareed. Mm-hmm. And I am cool, Chris Sims. I won't talk about lame subjects like that anymore. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like, it's popular again right now, though. I think I've seen a couple movies. Like a reboot, and like, is there a new show that they're doing?
Probably.
I don't know. Okay, I don't know. I mean, Karate Kid became popular again.
Yeah.
And Karate Kid's like 70, and he's like still fighting people.
Yeah.
And like Johnny put him in a body bag, and my son watches it, and I'm like, you're watching this shit? This is horrible.
And then we're the people that go, we used to watch this when we were kids.
Yeah, you know, I didn't watch Cobra Kai. I know that's the show there. But all right, everybody.
Pete says you also sang Popeye the Sailor Man.
Yes.
Woody the Woodpecker. Oh, that didn't make the cut.
Damn, that should have. That's a classic right there.
And here's the thing. We were singing those songs early on in the draft.
We were.
So it wasn't even after multiple beverages.
I had already got the work in. I'd already got my beverages in. I was good. I got mine in already. You know, you were a little slow. You were a consistent sipper. I am not a consistent sipper. I may suck a lot of smoke down and drink that thing fast kind of guy, and then we sip from there. That's how that goes.
I put a pretty good dent in the Woodford Reserve was there. I did, but as my wife says, I just get happier when
you're
I drink.
You're so mature and
classic. I try to keep it together as much as I can.
You're the most perfect human being on earth. I'm convinced you have something that you do that's crazy that I don't know. I don't know what that is, but there's something. You can't be this perfect.
What lurks in the shadows?
There's something there. There's
it used
something.
To be my pit stains, but I've cleaned
you
that
fixed
up.
You fixed that up. See what I mean? So there's got to be something else. It's got to be, right? But all right, what's up, everybody? You know what it is. We're going to recap the draft. We got lots of news topics to hit on. Amon and I are going to kind of break down the teams and maybe picks that jumped out to us.
Yeah.
And we'll try to kind of encapsulate it all here.
Yes.
There's going to be some teams we might not hit on today or whatever, but we'll try to get to that Wednesday. We're just going to give you the big headlines, the teams that really jumped out, the picks that really made the blood boil a little bit on Thursday, Friday night, which was a lot of fun. It really was. Great weekend.
It was a lot of fun. We'll try to get to a lot of the teams. We do make the promise to talk about every game on Sundays during the season.
Right.
That's the promise we make to the homies. We don't make that promise to talk about every team, but we're going to get to a lot here and a lot of the players that were picked here. But yes, Danielle, make sure she knows how much fun that was that she set up that party for us.
I will.
And it was an awesome time again. A new tradition is born. I hope we can do that every year, even if we're not working at NBC anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just going to come over and we're going to just watch the draft together.
Sounds good.
I don't care.
I mean, I think it should be the new tradition. It's the draft in the barn. And I think like next year I might actually grow the party a little bit.
Okay.
To where we get some friends around.
Cool.
Right? So when picks are made, people yell and whatever else, but we have like a real
atmosphere,
not just draft atmosphere where it's our work people that are excited about football and like that, but I get a few knucklehead friends that I know that'll be like loud drunks and whatever else that'll add to the background noise and excitement of the day.
Or the background crashing into the background, separating the balloons.
Exactly,
exactly. All right, so let's talk about big picture to start here.
Yeah.
Our 2024 NFL draft recap. So the quarterbacks went off the board fast. Six in the first round. tied for the most ever, 1983, also had six in the first round. But this was different than that.
Yeah.
Top 12 picks, there were six. That's never happened before. In 83, it was the top 27 picks is when all those six quarterbacks went off. Does this mean that when we look back at this draft, these quarterbacks, this is going to be the best quarterback draft we have ever seen?
Well, I don't know if we're ready to do that. I think it's got a chance.
But that's what it indicates right now. We've never seen this many taken this early.
That's right.
So if it's not the best ever, then some players disappointed.
Yeah, I mean that's fair to say. I think to make that assumption, you know, we hit on this a little last week, right? You know, again with the rookie salary cap in place and the actual salary cap hovering over everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Drafting a quarterback is not as a oh my gosh we drafted a quarterback and now we're stuck for the next 5 years type of thing like it was just 20 years ago, right? When the first guy of the draft came in, the quarterback who was like, whoa, he's the richest guy in the team now. Everybody, hey, I know he hasn't played a minute yet, but he's the richest guy on the team. Well, that's changed, and that's led, I think, teams to being a little more aggressive at the top of the first round to draft these guys because they don't ruin your organization, your salary cap, and you know, the cost of if you do get it wrong and you have to move on 3 or 4 years from now, it's not that horrible, right? Where that used to be like, whoa, that ruined that organization for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So teams are willing to do that more. I think that's the big thing. And then the other thing is, you know, yeah, it is a talented class, and I think a talented class on top of what we talked about, which was different than the Trey Lance, Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence class, is I really think we had guys that really can play quarterback. I think that's the big thing, and I think that's why the league looked at it and went like, wait, not only do these guys have some physical attributes that are first round, but they can play the game. This isn't just like, oh, Justin Fields is really fast and he's got a pretty good arm, but oh, there's some things we need to work on in the pocket and throwing the ball consistently, right? Or is Trey Lance, where it's like his arm is really strong, it's powerful, he, you know, loses control of it a little bit and has some mechanical issues and he doesn't run a 2 minute warning, but he wins and he's a good athlete and he has a strong arm, right? I think there was little, you know, issues with all of those guys, really, right? Even Trevor Lawrence that year, you know, I had some issues as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what happened in this one here, really. Other than Drake May, out of the guys we're talking about, they're all kind of ready to go day one NFL quarterbacks, and they all can play the position.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the league looked at it and valued them maybe, you know, more than we all expected, really.
So here's what's crazy.
Right.
There were six quarterbacks taken in the first round.
Yeah.
There were five quarterbacks taken in every other round. So the remainder of the draft.
Yes, right.
There were only five quarterbacks taken. There were 137 picks between Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler, who was 150 off the board.
Right.
I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah.
Are there 137 picks? Is Bo Nix 137 picks better than Spencer
Rattler? No, probably not. No, I understand your logic here, but I think what happens, too, is there's only so many quarterback needs out there in the world and the teams, and then, you know, they have lots of other needs and things on their football team where guys go, wait, we can wait here, and the difference between Spencer Rattler and the next guy on our board is so minute that we don't care if we waste this pick on 4 or 5 or whatever. You know, so I think that's where it's more about, right?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, these guys were here. There was a gap. We fell off the cliff, and now here's the next gap of guys. And I think teams start to go, well, yeah, we got all these guys so smushed together, and it's not a desperate need at that point because you've already addressed it, that teams wait and address other needs that they know they got to have. But this has been something, this was the most drastic one. But again, this is where I think because of the things we just talked about, the rookie salary cap, all that type of stuff, everything that goes along with it, I think this is part of the new NFL where we've been seeing this. The second round quarterback is not really a thing anymore, right? I mean, really, who's the last second round quarterback? I'm trying to think off
Jalen Hurts.
Jalen Hurts. A Garoppolo, right? Yeah. Garoppolo was a second rounder, right? And Hurts was like, I don't know, is he going to be an athlete? Is he going to be a quarterback? We don't know what he's going to do, but we just like him, the player, and all that, right? So that's a rare thing, right? The second round quarterback. All right, Will Levis started the second round, right? That would be one last year too, right? But so that to me is not as a common thing. And then, yeah, what we've seen is once you don't go in that first 33, 34 picks, teams start to dive in to go, wait, we have a starter, right? We're not going to waste our second round pick on a backup. Like, unless we feel like our starter's coming to the end of his career and maybe there's a Garoppolo who can replace a Brady or a Levis that can replace Ryan Tannehill, right?
Yeah.
And they start to let it go. And that's why, hey, we've seen it's in a lot of years, though, it's first-round quarterbacks, and then we don't see anything till the late third, early fourth, right? Sam Howell that year, right? He was a fourth-round pick. I mean, so that's kind of where I think the league's mind is in that whole process there.
So it was the fifth round this time. Spencer Rattler went off. Jordan Travis from Florida State there.
Yeah.
Michael Pratt.
Right, so there's my point,
though. Green Bay Packers.
There's my point. Spencer might be better than those guys, right? But my point is that those guys are so close together, the teams aren't like, we got to trade up 40 picks to get them 97th pick to get our future backup of our team, yeah. Right? I mean, that's where. So I think that's where people have realized, like, wait, hold on, right? If the grades aren't that far away from each other, we got them all clumped up together anyways. We're not that desperate to make that move and do that.
So one of those quarterbacks that was taken eighth overall by the Atlanta Falcons. Did you hear about this pick? Michael Penix turns 24 next Wednesday and will be 33 by the time he starts in Atlanta, but it'll be a great day.
You're funny.
Trey Lance, by the way, as Pete notes here, turns 24 next Thursday. How crazy is that?
It's crazy.
So they're about the same age here. Robo Cage chimes in and says, Penix is older than Sam Howell. If you think he's the future, then develop him in games. This isn't some young Jordan Love or even Trey Lance who needs development. He's developed. He needs to show he can stay upright in games. So this has been widely panned, this pick. We are trying to piece it together in real time, in the barn. And I go, what does this mean? And you go, weird stuff.
Weird stuff. So
you've had a few days to digest this. I would be curious if there is any reason that you are maybe different or thinking maybe, you know what, it's weird, yes, it's odd, they shouldn't have done it, but I see this and this is potentially okay for them.
I mean, it is okay for them. It's still a really odd, weird move that I can't get behind, right? Right. I think that's the biggest thing, right? It's the NFL right now, assets, right? It's the name of the game. The league is so even, right? So your money and your draft picks are like your biggest assets, let alone some of your star players, right, where you may be able to trade or get some value from that way. But, I mean, those are your three biggest things that make your team go, right? And the good teams know how to balance them out throughout their organization. Or every now and then they might throw, we'll be a little imbalanced and maybe not be as good at linebacker and we'll be just unreal at defensive line, right, or something like that. But that's as far as that goes, right? Top 10 pick, $100 million, position a quarterback? I mean, this just in. Like, those are your three biggest assets a team can have. And they've wasted two of them on one position where one's not even going to be able to play. So that's, I think, the basic thought, right? And then I think when you take that into consideration, and because I got so much to say about this subject, and I don't want to
beat it
to death.
Even more than we said before.
Well, yeah. I feel like as the more it sat there, I feel like Friday morning I was like, I've had a moment to think about this more and digest it. I needed to even talk about this more. I wish I would have gotten into it because my brain went into some things that I didn't think about live with a drink in me and all that. And we're keeping up with the draft and doing all
it's
that.
It's the
right?
only drawback of drinking
it's
during our show.
It's the only drawback. Yeah, and it's so quick moving, you don't get to maybe unpack things in your mind totally, right? To think about all the consequences. All right. So the biggest thing is, and as we said this, I think we said this that night, they knew they needed a quarterback in Atlanta in November. Like, we knew Desmond Ridder wasn't in early November, we knew, right? Whether they were going to make the playoffs or sneak in or whatever, great. But we knew they needed a new quarterback. That was for known, right? So they should have already had all these thoughts and feelings about Penix already, like, in the bank and done. And we also knew, like, in early January that Michael Penix was going to be there at pick 8. Everybody did. In fact, at that point, everybody thought he was a second rounder and he'll be one of these guys where, he's older and he's got the injury concerns and somebody will take a shot on him at pick 35, right?
Yeah.
To be the future, but they didn't have to put too many of their big assets in to get him at 35, right? That's what it was thought. Right? They have to have those answers figured out at the start of free agency or have a feel at that point.
But they also maybe hadn't gotten to know Michael Penix. They didn't know everything about him at that point either.
I understand that too. But again,
they may have fallen in love with him as the process went on.
Well, and I mean, to a degree, it sounds like that's what happened, right? I don't know. I've heard from people around the league, and I don't know this 100%. I said this on PFT today. That, like, the GM and the head coach signed off on this. Like, they actually wanted this to happen. That's what I've kind of heard. They went to the owner and like, let's do this, right? Hmm. Now, that would lead me to believe, yeah, they fell in love with maybe his workout they had. They had a personal workout and whatever else. Maybe that's what it – but again, those things should have been known already. They should have been known, right? I mean, Terry Fontenot should have seen Michael Penix by that time on the field throwing at least three or four times to go, he's unreal. Everybody thinks he's going the second. We're taking him in the top 10, right? We're not going to sign Kirk Cousins to $100 million, right? And that is the disproportionate assets is what's stupid. Mm-hmm. And not only to that, you pay $100 million for the next 2 years of Kirk Cousins, who wants to be there 4 years and win a Super Bowl. You've cut a huge ability of his, like, ability to lead and be the man on that football team right out from underneath him right away. And now here we go into training camp, right? And I've joked around, it's old man, white guy, getting healthy on one leg. And it's going to be Michael Penix coming in with one of the strongest arms we've seen come into the draft here and sometime. And he's going to be throwing the ball all over the lot. And he's mature and ready and played a lot, right? Which doesn't speak to, again, this is not Drake May where he's got to sit a few years. This is a guy that is ready this moment. That was one of the beauties of Michael Penix and Bo Nix. That's why everybody liked them. They're mature. They know what to do. They're ready to play. So that's where, you know, yeah, that's crazy, and they're going to make Kirk Cousins look over his shoulder pretty early on in this process.
So Bliss Follower has perhaps the counterpoint here. He goes, the Falcons have wallowed in quarterback purgatory for years. Now they have options at the most important position in sports. And Pete notes here, you know, it has only been 2 years since Matt Ryan left, and so I wouldn't say they've been in purgatory for that long.
Yeah.
But now you have, arguably, the most talented quarterback room, quarterback starter and quarterback backup in the NFL.
Right.
That's important.
It's cool.
You'd rather have it than not have that.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, that's cool. Hold on, I just want to pull this up. All right, that's great. But like, again, those are things that are good for other positions because those other positions, wait for it, more than one can play, right? So what a great room, man. What one of our top assets really draws on the chalkboard well. I mean he's one of the most important assets in our franchise. He gets lunch for Kirk every day. Yeah. And he draws.
Kirk won't make him do that.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, I understand that. And again, from that standpoint, I know there's some value there. And yes, you're going to be able to sell the handing of the baton and all that. My counter to that would be this right here. I would have rather not have Kirk Cousins, save the money, draft Michael Penix, and with that $100 million, we could assign Christian Wilkins and Danielle Hunter. Hmm. And I like that team better than anything. Whoa, Michael Penix with young stars, Kyle Pitts and Drake London and Bijan Robinson. Who do you think those guys are going to want to be around as they grow here into the culture of the Falcons? Kirk Cousins guy?
No. He's got the chain. He's got the shirt off.
Kirk
Have you not
chains?
Seen that?
Well, yeah. I'm just saying these are the things you're in danger of here, right? Yep. Again,
Kirk That's Cousins, interesting, though.
He misses some practice. Yeah. He misses some practice, and now he gets to run with the ones. And they're like, whoo, what I did before today. You know, Kirk Cousins over there doing a rehab day because it's been, you know, I got a pitch count. I'm coming back from an Achilles. Shoo! 50-yard bomb to Drake London. Shoo! 70-yard bomb to Darnell Mooney. Go into the locker room after practice. Everybody's buzzing about Michael Penix Jr., what he looked like with the ones.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the problems they're inviting. What would you think I was interesting there?
No. Just how you said, the allocation of resources.
The allocation
right?
of resources is the biggest thing.
How you
right.
could have spent that money in free agency, I think, is
They can have Bryce Huff,
fair.
Right, who the Eagles got, and they can have Christian Wilkins, and we can go, man, they put him with Michael Penix. Watch out. Watch out for the Falcons this year. But instead, we got Kirk and Michael Penix in the same room together.
Zink Terry sums it up well, basically saying what we've all said. You either sign Kirk and draft the day one starter, or you draft Penix and sign a cheap bridge quarterback, then use his rookie quarterback deal to sign the top free agents. This way, you either wasted a first-round pick, or you wasted $100 million.
There you go, Zink Terry.
And
that's,
so
that's my
here's,
guy
here's
right
what
there.
I can say. It's always that's weird right. for Kirk Cousins. He yeah. just can't have a career where something is nice for him. You know, it's always something's weird.
Well, something's been nice. I mean, his bank account's really nice.
That's
so
true. You're right.
He's winning there.
But I will say this. You know, they the Atlanta Falcons, the only team in the NFL that has a good quarterback, where if he gets hurt, everyone will actually be maybe more excited.
Well,
you know, it's just like, normally you have a bad quarterback, they get hurt, you're like, all right, let the young guy play. Here, you actually have a good quarterback. If he gets hurt, it's not a as big of a letdown.
Well, let's talk about the dynamics a little bit.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, this is not only, this is not sexy, but really good quarterback who doesn't get the respect he deserves, but getting up there in age and has the injury. And then you got a quarterback here that everybody's been watching in college football the last 2 years going, damn, he's just been tearing it up for 2 years straight. I mean, if he won the Heisman this past year, I would have been like, yeah, okay, right. I mean, he's worthy of that. I know Jaden Daniels' year was that special, right? And he deserved it. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But that's what kind of player we're talking about. And then the arm, right? The way he plays. It's throw the ball down the field. Let's take in another reality of the situation. It's Atlanta. It's an African-American population. They're going to love Michael Penix there and all of that and what he can bring to the table as far as that, right? That's a real aspect. So they're sitting there at 1-3 going into game 5, and Kirk Cousins starts the game out 2-14, and they're down 10-0. Like, what do you think's going to happen? And
two for 14.
2-14.
Okay.
Like, he's got 2 completions and 14,
okay.
He's 2 out of 14 attempts.
Wow, okay.
Right? All right, let's say 2-9. Does that make you feel better?
Yeah, that, okay. That
okay,
makes,
2-9. He's still getting his ass booed in the Mercedes Dome, Benz Dome, and everybody's going, Michael Penix, and everybody on the sidelines looking and going, damn, I mean, Penix has been tearing it up. I mean, are they really going to stay with Kirk Cousins here? That's the problems they're asking for here.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Competition makes everyone stronger.
Yes.
Iron sharpens iron,
iron
is the positive way to look at this.
Iron.
So what do you think, real quick, about the rest of the Falcons draft? Because so much focus is on Michael Penix,
but let's do
a guy that you liked, Rook Arororo.
Arororo!
On the defensive line. They took three guys on the defensive line right after Penix. Arororo, Braylon Trice out of Washington, Brandon Dorlus out of Oregon.
Right.
So they beefed up. A lot of people thought they would go edge with that first pick. They ended up going defensive line and edge with picks 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were going to go Byron Murphy with that first pick, right? That was the one I kind of let. I know Dallas Turner was in my mock, but after I released my mock and the week went on, I had some people think it was going to be Byron Murphy, right? I do like the rest of their draft. I do, you know? I mean, the first pick was Rutrow, but row your boat down the stream, is one of the best picks you could have for 35. You know I loved him in this process. So not only him, get a good edge guy in Braylon Trice who can do it all and is a good football player. Your guy from Oregon.
I just forwarded a tweet.
This is your special right here. But tremendous athlete, upside, right? Versatility. It's just like he's one of those guys like we talked about. It's just got to figure out what he's going to be. Is he going to be a strong side DN or is he a D tackle? Or can he get better at anchor and hanging on double teams? But there's like real ability there. So from that standpoint, I did like those picks a lot.
And part of this, you know, Raheem Morris, defensive-minded coach, maybe that's what he said. He went to the owner, the GM, and was like, hey, I can make some of these guys that are going to be available on the second, third. We're going to be fine on the defensive line.
Yeah.
We can do something there. Take the quarterback with high upside with number one. I don't need the stud edge guy.
I hear you. You know, again, I just, it's,
I mean, I get all the reasons that you said.
No, I know. I hear you there.
I'm trying to give as many counter arguments because I've heard all the negative already.
It's fair.
I always trust that other people at least are not that dumb, right? And so they have thought of things that maybe would have some merit if you were in that room talking with them, but it does still seem pretty
dumb. Well, it just is like, when did the Michael Penix thing hit you? Why did this hit you? Where did it hit you? Why were you so intent on getting Kirk Cousins, right? Then why didn't you wait a little bit? I don't know. If you wanted just a little more due diligence on Michael Penix before you, threw all that money and the contract out to Kirk Cousins, I'm sure you could have bought time. Like, the world, the market wasn't like, oh my gosh, we got to have Kirk Cousins. It was like, it's Minnesota and Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Minnesota really wanted him.
Doesn't seem like it.
Right.
Yeah.
So Atlanta could have waited. And that's to me is, when did they know? When did they find out? They should have known earlier. I know that. And that's where it's just a little weird to everybody in the NFL.
They'll trade Kirk Cousins to the Raiders. They got left out. And so now you got Penix and you got some capital for Kirk Cousins now. J.J. McCarthy ended up going after Michael Penix. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were thinking that he would go before him, maybe even third pick in the draft by the New England Patriots. He goes to the Minnesota Vikings. Nuevo Huevo says, love that the Vikings didn't panic, were able to get McCarthy without giving up 23, then going up for a top defensive player on their board in Turner. Only three picks in next year's draft because of it, but I'll have to live with that. So, yeah, next year they don't have a second, third, fourth, or sixth round pick. So this was their draft. I don't know that they got proper value on all that stuff, but what do you think, J.J. McCarthy, and what does this tell you about what the NFL, because we heard a lot, the NFL is in love with J.J. McCarthy, but clearly there was a little drop-off between Drake May and, I guess, Michael Penix and J.J.
Well, I know I like J.J. McCarthy. I think a lot of people did. I do think there was people in the NFL, right, that would maybe use phrases like this with me with J.J. McCarthy. Are you one of those that believes the J.J. McCarthy hype, right? Mm. That's when I knew I was talking to a team that didn't like him very much, right? So that was – I think there was teams out there. I think there were some teams that were scared of, like, some of the things we brought up. Hey, he only threw 12 times this game, and he only did this game, and – you know, this game, he barely had to make any throws for them to win. So I think people are a little bit like, you know, was it him? Was it team and all that? And again, it goes back to what I say about a lot of this. Screw all of that. What does it look like? There was enough plays on the film to go, wait, this guy's covered. He's got to put it in a tight window. Can he do that? Right? But man, the J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix thing, holy cow, is that polarizing on social media and people thinking they're good, they're horrible. It's all over the place. Right? But I like it. I mean, I like it. I think he fits that offense. Again, you heard me say, they run play action. O'Connell's one of those guys that's even like, we're not running the ball well, but we're still going to run play action because linebackers, they chase, you know, rabbits sometimes, right? And they just can't help it, right? So I'm going to keep doing that and get J.J., you know, Justin Jefferson behind you. McCarthy's made for that. McCarthy's arm is powerful, which is usually the type of throws you got to make off a play action pass. So I think that's a great fit. They got two difference-making players on their football team. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you got, you know, arguably the best pass rusher in the draft, certainly the one with the most upside, and definitely starting defensive end with your starting quarterback for a long, long time. And I'm definitely happy for them. Yeah, and they made the right moves.
So the top two for them, yeah, J.J. McCarthy and then Dallas Turner. So their two first-round picks out of Alabama get the quarterback that they liked, and a edge rusher could be the best in the class. So the other guys, you know, they had a fourth and a few sixth, and not a lot of huge names here that stand out to me. But
nobody special that's going to, like, change us. Kyrie Jackson's a good little player out of Oregon, the corner there, right? But I don't know if I look at anybody to go, oh, wow. You know, what could be of this group right here? Their team is not in a bad spot. Think about their receivers. Yeah. It's good, right? Running back, okay, it's not special, but solid. They got good tight ends. Their O-line is pretty good. They got really good tackles. Interior, you could maybe want a little bit more, right? D-line, they made some adjustments in free agency and did that, right? You know, secondary is probably another spot you can still look at them to go, yeah, they could probably use another player or two in their secondary when it's all said and done. But, you know, I think they're a team that probably looked at it and went, wait, we don't have a ton of needs right now, right? We addressed a lot in free agency. Yeah. We got some young talent. These are pillars. We got to get them, and they got them.
Good players as far as allocation of resources. I mean, they gave up a lot, and I don't know if this was necessarily the plan. You know, you gave up a lot to get a quarterback, and they ended up getting the fifth best quarterback, and they sent away multiple picks in future years. So I don't know if the value was there with what the Vikings were able to end up doing in this draft, but those two good players are certainly going to help them.
Well, you wonder why. You wonder, like, I'm never mad at a team securing a draft spot to make sure they get the guy they get, but you wonder if they really had a trade from 11 to 10, right? Like,
yeah, that, yeah.
Like,
probably not.
Like, unless they just thought the Raiders were going to jump them and take somebody there. Denver wasn't. Denver liked Bo Nix. We know they like Bo Nix. I know they like Bo Nix. It was Bo Nix all along. So they were wrong if they thought J.J. McCarthy was going to go to Denver, right? So, yeah, they might have gave up some assets to ensure something that they felt was very important, and I'm not going to be too pissed at them for that.
Plug and Play said, hey, Chris and Ahmed and Unbuttoned Crew, great coverage Thursday from the barn. I absolutely love that Sean Payton got his guy in Bo Nix. Like you said, back in February, paired him with Troy Franklin. How did Franklin slip to round four? And then Jason Bilyeu says, at the risk of sounding like a fanatic, I think the Broncos had one of their best drafts in years. Does Bo Nix have the skills and ability to start day one? If so, are the Broncos a playoff team?
Mm. I think the Broncos are like a on the cusp of a play. Not too much different than what we saw last year, mm-hmm. right? I don't think it's too much different there. I think, you know, overall, it's a team that's probably still needs another weapon on offense maybe somewhere. You know, defensively, is there that guy up front that's a big-time playmaker or disruptor there? No, they got a good group of edge guys, and I think some guys that have the potential to kind of jump on the scene there this year, right? So I think they're like that fringe playoff type of football team. But, man, I mean, yes, I love Bo Nix. Bo Nix was a first-round quarterback. I can't stand this, like – like, first off, it's like some draft pundits just say, oh, the value's not there, and then everybody just craps on it. Instead of going, let me see, the guy that's been the best offensive coach or one of the best quarterback coaches in football saw something. Hey, fuck him. He's wrong. I'm right. That's bad value. Yeah. I mean, that's where we're at in the world, which is crazy, I think. Bo Nix can do it all, and he's ready, and they needed someone that can play right now, right? He's got a stronger arm than people realize. And then would I love Jonah Ellis in round three, getting the guy from Utah, who was one of my favorite edge guys, yeah. right? Troy Franklin in round four, you know, little speed, got a little size. Route running ability is less than. I think that was the big reason he was still on the board. And then our running back, Estime, good power back, and Sean Payton finds value in those type of guys.
Players.
Yeah.
The only way I would say that this was poor value is do you think that the Raiders would have taken Bo Nix?
I don't know. I don't have no inside info there. Probably not. I mean, I would say no.
Take him,
right.
Then
where's
who
it going to go?
Right. He's the second round quarterback.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. I think so. Unless it's like a team like, you know, where teams thought maybe the Giants might jump into the end of round one or one of those type of teams might jump back in. And this is one where you have a desperate need. It's quarterback, and you like the guy.
Don't mess around.
Yep. Right. You don't. And you
say it differently than me, but right. I say you don't mess around. Basically the same thing.
Yep.
DraftKings now has the Offensive Rookie of the Year odds. They are out immediately. No surprise. Caleb Williams is the favorite, plus 200. Marvin Harrison went to Arizona, plus 600. The second choice, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy. Then Malik Nabers, your G-men. Plus 1,200.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Drake May is lower. You know, who knows if he's ready to go. A lot of the talk that not ready year one.
Right. Nabers will be interesting because he's just going to – we know they're going to feed him, and he's ready. Like we talked about, he's the best slot in the draft. He's the best outside guy in the draft. He's the most explosive player in the draft at receiver. He's the best with the ball in his hands. He's the best route runner, right? They're gonna formulate the whole offense around him, and they don't have that guy.
Yeah.
So there's a guy I go right away to go, if you want value, I'd look for him because he can end up with 90 receptions for 1,200 yards right away in year one. Caleb Williams, of course, is the guy I like, though. I do. You know, I like that they doubled down and went Odunze. I thought they might go defense, which I was cool with, too. But, I mean, they're basically saying a little bit kind of like what you just said with Raheem Morris in Atlanta. Eberflus is going, hey, our D is good, right? Did a few things in free agency. We're okay, right? Now let's make the offense just scary to where they can attack at all times, right? And I think that's what I really like about it now. I mean, you know, we talked a lot going up into this process. Yeah, their defense is one of the best in football. They've done a good job in addressing some of those, you know, little problems they might have had in free agency. Got a safety, right? Kevin Byard, whatever else. But now they're going, no. hey, it's not just going to be about our defense. Caleb Williams, we're coming in, and we're not managing Caleb Williams. I think that's what they just told me with that pick 9. It's Keenan Allen, it's Adunze, and it's DJ Moore, and it's Cole Kmet, and we are coming, and it's no training wheels, and we think this guy's ready to roll. And that's what I think is cool.
It's very hard, as we saw last year with Puka Nacua, for a wide receiver to win this award over good performing quarterback.
Right.
Almost impossible, I would say, as we saw one of
the
best.
They got Austin Booker in the fifth, another one of those guys like we just talked about from Utah and Ellis that I just went, man, Booker was one of my honorable defensive end mentions, right? I think he'll really fit what Chicago wants to do. He's long as hell. I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up being the other pass rusher off this other side of Montez Sweat.
Pete wants to know.
Yeah, what is
who
Pete
has the
know?
Best quarterback situation of the wide receivers? Marvin Harrison Jr. with Kyler, Malik Nabers with your guy Daniel Jones, or Rome Odunze with the rookie phenom and Caleb Williams?
Well, I mean, Harrison Jr.'s got probably the leg up, right? At least the start, right? I mean, that would be the big thing. I mean, it's just Kyler Murray's still damn good. That's a good offense. They got some other things in that offense too that. You know, it doesn't have to be all about him, right? Or you go, hey, they ran the ball well last year, right? I mean, the tight end they got out of Colorado State, I'm blanking on his name. He's damn good. We saw the receiver and Wilson from Stanford be good, you know. But I think between that offense and having a more experienced quarterback, he's probably got the advantage.
Of the 6 round 1 quarterbacks,
yeah.
How many do you think sign a second contract with their drafting team?
Ooh.
Pete has set the over-under at 3.5.
I'm going to go with the over on this one.
You think?
Okay. I am. I'm going to go that this class makes it, right? I'm not going to say it's 83 or anything like that, okay? That's, like, insane. But I'm going to say that I think there'll be not a ton of busts here. I don't think we're going to have busts in this one. I think we got guys, I'm not saying they're superstars, but I think we got a lot of guys that are going to be like, hey, you know, they picked him at 12, and he's still their starting quarterback, and he's been damn good or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what we're going to have here in this one. That would be my guess.
Injuries will throw a wrench into everything.
Of course.
So you've got to almost bake
protect
that
your
into
spleen.
One or two of those quarterbacks for sure. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, if you didn't know that.
Oh, damn. Of course I knew that. And during the playoffs, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly.
Okay, all right. Download the app. Use the promo code UNBUTTONED when you sign up.
Oh, I like that. DraftKings Sportsbook.
The crown
is yours.
You couldn't hear this, but Pete was also saying that at the same time in our ear.
Why didn't you think I can hear it?
Oh, the people at home I was talking to. Sorry about that.
I thought they were talking to me. I'm not a part of the show.
I don't know if you have your IFB turned on, if you tuned out Pete already. No, I assumed that you heard that. So 7 wide receivers in round 1.
Yep.
Tied for the most ever. That was over the over-under of 6.5
we
talked to Jay Croucher with.
But we talked about that being dangerous.
Possible at the end of the first
of the round. We kind
of
hit on that. I said, hey, the end of the first round was what would scare me about that bet. I actually thought about this. We should have gone back and looked at our other bets that we talked about that we like, because I think we would have hit on all of them. And that was the aspect that scared us, right?
Yeah.
End of the first round, we said there was a clusterfuck of guys that could end up going there, right? That was your term, not mine. And I was calm it down. And we got to that, and exactly right. We got to that part of the board, and everybody was like, well, we don't need this, we don't need that. Let's just go with the receiver here. And, we saw a little run there at the end.
And it carried over into the top of the second round, too, which was
right off
interesting.
The bat.
55 total offensive linemen were drafted. That is a record in the 7-round era.
Yeah.
Those big dudes up front. A lot of teams saw a knee. They're like, our offense does not function at all without those
The league is on notice right now. I think everybody in the league realized last year something that we've been saying for the last year and a half, that there's way more defensive linemen than O-line, and they can't even keep up. And I think that's why the value of these guys went off the board early and consistently throughout the draft.
Offensive players were taken with the first 14 picks. The previous record was the first 7 picks back in 2021. And get this.
Yeah.
14 straight offensive players, the longest streak of offensive players at any point in any single draft ever. So it was like even we're talking like 4th round. And 14 offensive players have never gone that many in a row. So when we look back at this draft, was this all a function of the quarterbacks? I think you're probably going to say yes on some of that. Or will we look at this draft as being down for this defensive talent?
I think it's down for the defensive talent.
Okay.
I think it's the quarterbacks. And then I think you had special tackles and a few special receivers, or it was like, whoa, like, we just can't let this pass us by. Right?
So if we have a year where there are a few good quarterbacks, a few good receivers, a few good tackles, we're going to see this in the future, the defensive players. Like the days of, I don't know, like Jalen Carter last year.
Well, if we get to years year, where like Jalen Carter year. Without the problem, right, the car racing, right?
Yep.
No, that's going to, like, Miles Garrett those years, they're going to disrupt that for sure, right? You're going to have
Aiden
that.
Hutchinson still
exactly. Well, they're still going to be in there. That this year, there wasn't that guy, right? There was nobody, I think, near to that. There was a lot we like and da-da-da-da-da, but nothing like you were just like, that's a definite top five pick. Really, to me, the only guy there was Quinyon Mitchell, and he wasn't from the school and everything else, I think, to make everybody feel warm and cozy like we talked about that.
So let's go through some. Speaking of Quinyon Mitchell, let's go through some of your favorite picks of every round. So we're going through every round right here and maybe one or two players who you thought were awesome picks. And in round number one, no surprise, the Eagles, who have gotten a lot of love, almost too much love, like 2 years in a row in the draft. I feel like it's getting inappropriate at this point. 22nd overall, they took corner one on your board, many other teams' boards, in Quinyon Mitchell.
He corner one on everybody's board. That's one thing I'm pretty confident
Not
about.
Not everyone's board. My guy Brad Holmes said that Terrion Arnold was number one on his board.
Yeah, we'll get to that later there, buddy.
We do need to look at the boards to make sure that people aren't lying to our faces.
But no, it's Quinyon Mitchell, man-to-man cover corner, lockdown at pick 22, and a guy that they were definitely looking to go, wait, we'll trade up to get him, and he just falls into their lap. And I think it's not only that. It's not about the talent. It's like they only have one need on their whole fucking football team, and it was corner, and they got the best one in the draft. And then you went, wait, what's the second need they need in a football team? Oh, it's a safety kind of nickel guy? Oh, my gosh, they're going to get him in round two, too, and Cooper DeJean? I mean, yeah, that's where it's crazy. And then when you're so good and your team is so amazing, you can make a fuck you pick in round three with Jalix Hunt, who is totally raw but has all the physical tools, and that guy that could be like, hey, the Eagles have like some star from Houston Christian University, like, and it's like, yeah, you know, they because they're so well built, they can maybe take a chance onto that guy like that a little earlier than most teams because there's no desperate need on their football team.
Yeah. There was one homie who commented, I don't know who it was, I was reading it earlier this morning, that said they were an Eagles fan, and they go, I loved the fact that Chris was saying that every team was going to take Cooper DeJean, and you were upset when Quinyon Mitchell went to the Eagles, and just knowing he already knew that Cooper DeJean was going to the Eagles, it was just like, this is great.
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing.
It's making
it really
Chris
is.
Even more and more mad. And although they did take Jeremiah Trotter, and you were not that high in Jeremiah Trotter. So maybe one
mess
pick
up
for
there.
The
we'll
Eagles
see.
That you don't like.
But Trevor Keegan is a good fifth-round pick, a linebacker, right? You know, that was good, certainly. Yeah, but I think it's really those top three that I just went, again, for a team that doesn't need much and has pretty good depth, you know, they got some guys that can play and help their football team, like, no doubt, right away with Mitchell and DeJean.
It was Adam Blackall that said, hey, Chris, remember that time your man crush fell to the Eagles, then you kept calling for DeJean the next five picks, and then the Eagles get him too?
Yeah, I
loved that.
Thank you, Adam Blackall, Mr. Eagles fan. Thank you. Thank you for continuing to dominate the NFC East.
And so those were your favorite picks of round one and round two.
They were.
Quinyon Mitchell and
Eagles.
Cooper DeJean.
I know.
And so this is what I will say about the Eagles. I will give them some praise here, even though everyone else is doing it, and I feel like it's getting gross at this point.
Yeah.
They do a good job of accumulating draft picks. I don't think that they think that they are experts at necessarily picking out the right player. They realize that the more chances you have at it,
the
more swings you take, the better.
Right. And this one, they set the record, right, with eight trades in the draft.
Yeah, trading down most of the time.
Yeah.
Maybe all the time.
Yeah, well, they got the asset game, you know, in a perfect world. They're so ahead of the game with the players they have, the depth, and what they built that, yeah, they have the ability to kind of play with their assets maybe more than other teams.
Play with their assets. That's what the Eagles do. Round three. Your round three favorite player. Who was that?
My round. Oh, it was your middle linebacker. your squad, Junior Colston, right? I mean, Junior Colston, I think, was without question my round three favorite. I think Colston, excuse me, I always want to add a T in there, my bad. But Colston was my favorite linebacker in the draft. They needed a Jim Harbaugh physical thumper type of middle linebacker there, right? So they addressed that. You know, I think he's perfect. And what else works there, Ahmed? Oh, the Michigan D coordinator's there. Oh, the middle linebacker's usually the quarterback of the D. So he's going to be able to coach everybody up, kind of get everybody in the right spot. It's that way. All right? I like the Chargers draft in general. They've gotten a little flack, and I want to be like, wait, they got Joe Alt, and you're mad at that? They got Ladd McConkey, who's like – a great all-around receiver to complement the two big guys they got in Palmer and Johnson. Now you got the little jitterbug who can do it all. Colston, we talk about. Yeah, I'm a fan of all of that right there. The Alabama D tackles on is a damn good football player. Getting Cornelius Johnson from Michigan, who's better than a round seven pick, right? So everybody was busting on them because of what? They didn't take Malik Nabers at five? No, they got Jim. When people go, well, culture, what does culture mean? It means when Jim Harbaugh takes over a team, he gets guys that he thinks will fit how he wants to coach. They'll understand his message. When he yells at them, he knows they're going to be able to handle it, right? That's culture. They're going to buy into what he's selling and how he's coaching the team. And I think he got a lot of those guys in this draft.
I mean, we've seen it the past few years. Justin Herbert just getting beat up. A lot of times, getting hurt, you want to protect your most valuable asset that you have on your football team, and that is just
Herbert, and they haven't been able to run the ball there in a decade with the Chargers. So now they're going to be, Harbaugh wants to run the football, and you talk about this guy at right tackle, Slater at left tackle, Zion Johnson, the Boston College guard, right? At the other guard, I mean, they got something working there to where they can be real dominant up front.
Nicholas Medire, 3, says, I love that the Chargers used their first two picks going with Joe Alt plus Ladd McConkey instead of going wide receiver first with Malik Nabers and then whatever else as their second round pick. And that you're right, they got Cornelius Johnson, 7th round flyer.
Right.
They got Brendan Rice, Jerry Rice's
son. Exactly right, another
USC
guy.
USC flyer, 7th round.
Right. That are going to be better than people think and know how to play and are going to be like NFL ready to where we're going to go, damn, they got these good, like, 4th receivers in the 7th round. And it's like, yeah, well, Jim's been coaching college football a little bit. He kind of knows the in on some of these guys. And Cornelius Johnson was a guy that I know you watch Michigan. I was up there. He's from here in Connecticut. He went to Brunswick High School right around the corner from where I live, right? He's a player. He is, and he got to open a lot for them. He's not a star, but he's a player. I like the draft by the Chargers. Good
he
job.
And Roman Wilson could not star for them, but they're faster than you would think. Angel Walks California, CA, says, I like that for the first time in over a decade, thanks Tom Telesco, the Chargers were able to get some picks after the second round that have a good chance to contribute early in their careers. So Charger fans are feeling good. The Jim Harbaugh era off to a good start.
Right.
You have another pick in round three that you really liked. 82 to the Cardinals.
Well, this team, I think they killed the draft, the Arizona
overall.
Cardinals. I do, overall. And I love the other favorite third-round pick was Tip Raymond, the tight end from, Illinois, the combine, the only guy that got cheers when he moved the sled, right? Because he was the only guy that could move the sled in the blocking drill out of the tight ends, right? Remember that? We laughed about that.
It was very impressive.
Yeah, he's a stonehead. He's made. He's made for NFL football. He's arguably the best run blocking tight end in the draft. He's powerful. His pass game is going to be better than people expect. It's going to be more valuable. He's very big. He can adjust to the ball. He's going to be one of those guys where it's like, yeah, he's covered, but damn, to get your arms around him to actually knock the ball, we can't get our arms around him. He's too big. It's going to be Gronkish that way. Mm-hmm. So that's where I love that. And yes, as a whole, the Cardinals – they made this draft big last year. Remember how they traded out and acquired all these picks? And damn, Monty Austin, Fort and company, they killed it in Arizona, I thought.
So you like Marvin Harrison, even though what people say out there, you didn't have him number one,
right.
But still he is
of course.
A difference-making wide receiver. And then they got Darius Robinson, who I thought maybe my Detroit Lions would take at the end of the first round.
I thought
he was
so
a
too,
Detroit
baby.
Guy.
You're right.
The defensive lineman, Max Melton from Rutgers. He was your number, three or four corner?
I think he was my number four. Think. Right.
And so that's their first three picks. Thomas Allison, 5, says the Cardinals draft was so good that Mike Florio hasn't written a negative Cardinals-related article in over 3 days. It's been over three days.
That was good.
Text him right now, Pete. Text him right now.
He's like, damn, they're not dysfunctional when it comes to the draft, right? But, I mean, it's Hey, Harrison Jr., love it. Darius Robinson, you know what I think about him. I mean, to me, he's got DeForest Buckner-ish type of ability with him, let alone I think there's some outside value there too. But when you look at their team, right, they have a lot of good on the D-line. They have no difference maker on the D-line. So that's where I like that. I think that was a much-needed area to address with their football team. Max Melton is one of the few guys, as you know, is a shutdown man-to-man island type of corner. They don't have that. You get Trey Benson to back up James Conner. I like that. That's going to be good. We talk about Tip Raymond, right? The tackle from Isaiah Adams from Illinois is not bad. But then even the Dadrian Taylor
Demerson, safety from Texas Tech.
Great athlete. He was one of the better athletes of safety in the whole draft. So that was another really good one I like. I thought overall it was like one of those where it hit needs and it hit quality. And when I see that, I like it a lot.
You also liked a lot what the Steelers did at wide receiver in round three.
Well, round three, that would have been definitely another one of my number favorite picks. I mean, first off, you know I like Roman Wilson. I know you liked Roman Wilson, but you're biased, and
you can't
you're
take
a
my
Michigan
opinion.
Fan.
I know it's just,
you know, but
I recuse myself from this conversation.
But you did like that he was my number five rated wide receiver, and damn, it made me feel good inside when the Steelers took him. Because the Steelers always have the magic eye about receivers. So I was like, oh, good, Steelers took him. That makes me feel good about where I put him. Like, they're going to see what I saw. I think he's one of the best all-around receivers in the draft. He's going to be perfect. They got a day one starter opposite George Pickens in the third round. And a guy that can do it all. Play on the outside, play the slot, do that. But then how do you not like the two damn offensive linemen they got? They must have shit their pants when Troy Fountenot was there at 20, right? I think I had Graham Barton there. Most of the league had Troy Fountenot off the board at 20.
Some people were even saying, like, hey, don't be shocked if he is one or two off the board. You know, like, who knows if a team loves him.
Don't be shocked. I wouldn't have been shocked if the Jets took him at 10. I mean, there was a lot of teams that I thought were, like, going to be in the run. So they must have been like, oh, my gosh, he's here? Run to the board. Run to the podium. And then Zach Frazier at center?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was damn awesome. Roman Wilson, an athletic linebacker, and Peyton Wilson, really like that. And damn corner from Texas, Ryan Watts ain't bad either.
So Jamie Barber says, I loved that the Falcons proved my Steelers offensive coordinator wasn't the problem when he was head coach, and the Steelers just rocked it again. Samuel Tessier says, I love that the Steelers took a chance on Peyton Wilson. He's a freak athlete, smart player, and seems like a humble person. Was he the best linebacker in the draft? Well, according to our rankings, which we didn't do linebacker rankings,
no, not totally,
but we talked
right
about him.
Yeah.
You were not in love with what you saw from Peyton Wilson, but third round at this point in the draft.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Probably a good
It's kind of where I thought he would be, right? He's we've seen guys like him, I think, get overdrafted and go in like the mid-second, and I think the league realized, like, wait a minute, you know, good athlete, got injury history, right? Doesn't play necessarily the most physical brand of football. So liked him a lot. But, yeah, I think there's some of that first and second down thumping that he's going to have to kind of work on a little bit. Going to be awesome. Pass game, screens to the sideline, any of that, he's going to be really good. And, hey, to our first question with at Jamie Barbour, the Falcons, you know, Arthur Smith, he's going to fit how the Steelers want to play offensive football and what they do. You know, I think this is going to work, you know, just right. With this offensive line, that running back, get Russell Wilson on track. They're not going to put too much on his shoulders, and now they got two good damn receivers with that tight end. They're going to be a pain in the butt on offense.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well.
So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Scarecrow Boat says, for the Bills, I love that we weren't afraid of trading down with Kansas City. Used the third rounder they gave us to take your guy, Dwayne Carter, defensive lineman out of Duke. And I also think Keon Coleman is a better all-around wide receiver than Xavier Worthy anyways. So Scarecrow Boat liking what the Bills did. And you did like that round three pick, 95 overall, Dwayne Carter going to Buffalo.
I did. Was that you that sent me the text that, like, Saban said I like him a lot more than the most or whatever?
Well, Saban was really coming off as an unbuttoned listener, right? Because he said that Marshawn Lloyd might have been his
favorite running back. Right, right.
And that he said he liked Dwayne Carter more than some of the guys who'd already been taken.
Right, right.
And I was like, okay, did you just – I mean, I know that he hasn't been in media that long, so we probably had to –
subscribe, rate, review, Mike.
Cut some corn.
Yeah, come on.
That's all we ask, Nick,
just write a review. Right.
Tell your
a
friends,
little comment under there.
Share it with five of your coach friends.
Yeah, right, right, exactly. No, I do like the Bills draft. I love Keon Coleman at 33. I do like Keon Coleman overall better than Xavier Worthy. I do. You know, Xavier Worthy has his purpose that is amazing, and it's elite. I get that. Keon Coleman, to me, is going to be more every down, every, you know, more consistent use. Huge human being. Awesome route runner. One of the best route runners in the draft, right? With the ball in his hands, he can make people miss. He can break tackles. And, of course, as we said on Thursday – or, no, I guess I said on social media on Friday night, right? I mean, he has a chance to be the best jump ball 50-50 back shoulder receiver in all of football. So I love that. And they needed that. They're going to be fucking big on offense. You think about that?
Mm.
Think about – their old line's pretty big. Now you got the two tight ends on the field and this guy, right? Which I think two tight ends is going to be a normal part of their offense here as we go forward. Like, this guy's big as a small tight end in some cases here.
Yeah.
So they're gonna have something. I think he's perfect for a Josh Allen, because Josh Allen, even when you're covered, you're not covered, and that's where this guy's gonna come in handy for that guy.
So the Bills did catch some flack for trading with the Chiefs, and then they used that pick to get the guy who is the fastest that we've ever seen at the combine.
Right.
As a rule, do you think that's like an organizational no-no?
Well,
if you're gonna trade. And you know they're going to take maybe a wide receiver, and that's a position you want to. Do you not trade with the Chiefs of all teams?
Well, I think there's that a little bit. Yes, there's that aspect. And then, like, who they traded with the Bills to get Patrick Mahomes, right? So they're scarred with anything that's traded
like
with
never
the Chiefs.
Probably stop trading with them,
right? Yeah. You know, you traded with them, and they got the greatest quarterback to ever live. Like, please don't. I mean, I understand that thought. But, again, I don't think they were looking for that type of guy. Right, they have. I think they look at Shakir and Mac Hollins, and I'm maybe missing somebody else that's a part of their offense that they look at and go, "Wait, that's our speed guy. We're good with that." Oh, Curtis Samuel, exactly. Mm. I knew I was missing somebody. So okay, they have that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're going, "No, we need more meat potatoes." And Coleman is the guy that can be a great slot receiver, like an Anquan Boldin. Cole Bishop at safety, they needed that. Bishop is awesome. He can be good in coverage. He's actually more comfortable in the box down there and what he does there. I love that. And then, you know, I love Dwayne Carter. I mean, to get him in the third round, to me, is one of the steals of the draft.
Do you think the Bills go, Brandon Bean says, who are you going to take? And they go, Worthy. And we go, okay, we don't like Worthy. We don't think he's that good. All right, we'll do the deal. The coaches, I
think they asked that at
times. They go, who are you going to take?
Yeah, yeah. I think they're just not a, you're not crazy to ask that. Like, who are you thinking about here? Whatever. Like, that's
sometimes they'll go offense. We're looking offense here, right? If they don't want to tell the player.
I mean, I think there's little talks like that go on through those conversations there.
Let's go to round four.
Yeah.
112 overall to the Las Vegas Raiders. One of your top five corners in DeCamrion Richardson goes off the board there. What that's pretty good value for a guy that you think flew under the radar for most people. You were higher on him than basically everyone out there, except maybe the Raiders.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't played a ton, right? And I think he's a little raw that way and doesn't have maybe a sexiness about him. This was another one that made me feel warm and cozy, though, because I know Patrick Graham and company can evaluate DBs coming from New England and doing that. You know, and I think they just look at his length and his size and they go, wait, You know, between that and then the way he runs is pretty special, and he changes directions damn well. You know, they had a solid draft. I mean, I like Jackson Powers Johnson, DJ Glaze out of Maryland, of course, the other tackle they got, because they need O-linemen. That's one of the problems with the Raiders. And then getting Brock Bowers, I think, was a little bit like, oh, shit, like we thought Michael Penix was going to be here. What do we do? And they took the best player on their board in Bowers.
Yeah, how's that going to work, though? Because they took Michael Mayer last year.
They're
a two tight end team.
They're going to
go
two tight ends, right? They're going to put you in that bind. Antonio Pierce, I think, is telling you a little bit, we're going to run the ball. We're going to be physical that way. We're going to play through my defense. And, you know, they'll work those two guys with Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers, and you go, damn, that's a pretty good four guys to throw the football to.
Tripod 2X says, this was the first year in a long time that the Raiders didn't completely do the opposite of consensus and confuse everyone. Seems like they got a lot faster and meaner overall. I like it.
Yep.
And Young Denzel says, I love that the Raiders went best player available, got some great players instead of reaching for players. The Brock Bowers and Jackson Powers Johnson picks were amazing. Also got your number five corner, hopefully to develop into a great press man corner.
I think that's exactly what it'll be. That'll be the game plan. And then, yeah, with those first two picks, you got two starters that I think are ready right now. So that's the best part. I mean, Browers and Jackson Powers Johnson will help you out immediately.
So Pete is noting here in real time,
yeah,
that with the Bears last year, the now Raiders offensive coordinator and Luke Getsy, yeah, used two tight end sets at the seventh highest rate,
wow,
in the NFL.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed it's up there that high, but that's good to know. I could see that being, you know, their style and how they want to attack here. You know, they don't want to make it about their quarterbacks. I don't think they're looking like, hey, we want to throw the ball 40 times a game, right, with Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. I think they're looking like, no, we got to, you know, not put too much on them. They'll get us at a few binds here and there, and we just got to play a good overall team football game.
This surprised me a bit. Round 4, 113 overall. You think the Ravens knocked it out of the park with the wide receiver Devontez Walker?
I do. I just think
– we didn't talk a lot about Walker when we talked about wide receivers out of North Carolina.
Right. Yeah, I for this guy here at this spot, I think what I like too is, I mean, I think they have to really kind of, I don't want to say worry about their receivers, but like we kind of talked about the other day, Rashad Bateman has hurt a lot. Mm-hmm. He's been hurt a lot, right? So I think that's where it's a nice little insurance policy for them that way. But like the biggest thing with Walker can run flat out, straight away, speed guy, which, you know, I think you look at that a little taller, him complemented with Zay Jones and then a Bateman who can kind of do everything and Mark Andrews. I like the idea of that. But the other thing about the Ravens draft in general, where it might not just like wow you with like superstar names, to me the big thing was they address needs that were big time with good players. That's the big thing, right? Like they needed a corner. We know that. All right, they got Nate Wiggins. He's one of the, after Quinyon Mitchell, one of the last, you know, man-to-man guys left, right? They need a tackle, right? Ronnie Stanley, last year of his deal, they just traded away Morgan Moses. We were talking the other day, we don't even know who's going to be their tackle there, right? So Rogers Rosegarten, getting him. Pass rusher's a thing, you know? Adiza Isaac from Penn State, certainly got some potential there to make it work. We talk about Walker. TJ Tampa, I think, is another guy to get him in the fourth round. Pretty damn good. Bigger corner, right? Not going to be as good man-to-man and moving as Nate Wiggins, but can kind of do it all. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I kind of liked all of that right there. I thought they really addressed some things they needed to address.
You liked it. Daniel Kunimoto liked it. He goes, I think the Ravens quietly had a strong first round. Are you kidding me? Picking at 30, and we got Chris Sims' number two corner. Sign me up for that every year. And Juice Verhage says, Baltimore's fourth round.
Yeah.
Got some steals. TJ
yeah.
Tampa, Devontez Walker, two guys who were projected early day two picks. Is something up with them, or did the Ravens just get extremely lucky? Love the pod. So I will say this,
yep,
and I think this is worth noting every year, because there have been studies on like players who have fallen in the draft. You're
right.
Like, wow, what great value. More times than not,
yeah,
those players did fall for a reason.
Yeah.
And you are getting real-time feedback that other teams either did not have them on their board,
right,
or there was something they didn't like on them. Like the Lions got a couple late guys, and you're like, well, yes, they may have been a steal, or other teams were not interested for one reason or another.
Yeah, no, you know, or you know, hey, how many teams are looking for that straight line speed guy?
That's
and,
true.
You know, maybe
the skill set is
the skill set didn't fit the right spot.
Yeah.
It just didn't work out the right way. Right. I mean, I think your comment's right. DeVontez Walker, I don't think I expect him to go much higher than that. I thought probably he'd be like a third rounder. I can't remember what I wrote in my notes. I think I wrote like 60 to 80, which means end of the second, third round.
Mm-hmm.
So still, for him to be here. And again, I think the cool thing is it's just there's potential here. There's potential to be more, right? He's got incredible big play ability. That's the big thing. And you see him run by guys like Nate Wiggins in Clemson, right, who's the number two corner. So I think that's what you look at and go, wait, at the very least, this guy can make a few big plays for us, and maybe Lamar throws a few bombs to us, and we're just a more explosive offense. But I think that's where I like that, you know, definitely. And he's right about the TJ Tampa thing. TJ Tampa's not going to be like, oh, run with the speed guys and change direction with them. But as we kind of talk about, you're in the AFC North, the T. Higgins of the world.
Yeah.
He'll be a good matchup for that. He'll be able to go, wait, I'm big, I'm long, and I can move with you a little bit here. And that's where that'll really work, let alone he tackles and he's just a complete football player, which the Ravens always like.
So moving into round five, you mentioned this for the Bears already, 144, edge, Austin Booker out of Kansas, correct?
Yeah.
So you liked him. Brian Dem wants to comment too. I wanted to hate the Bears taking a punter, but the more I thought about it, and the fact that he has multiple highlight reels, I kind of love it. Am I wrong? Also helps we traded back in for Booker, who most of us wanted. So they got Booker's like, all right, we'll give you that punter thing. I'll tell you what, Torrey Taylor at Iowa, he was their guy. Like, they have T-shirts made for him. He was the star of – like, they had the stars on defense. They had Torrey Taylor, the punter, and that was it, basically. They had no stars on offense.
Right.
So if you're going to take a punter – he was the guy to take. How high would you ever take a punter when you become GM?
I feel like it's around that range.
What was it? When did they take him?
Fourth round? I believe it was, four, pick 122.
So that's his high. I mean, like, he is a different class of punter.
Yeah. It'd be like superstar punter. That'd be about the area you'd start to think about it, right? There is more value in drafting some of these really good punters and kickers than people realize, right? I mean, again, we saw the 49ers draft the guy in Moody, right? And it worked out. They needed it, and he helped them. I know he missed a few here and there, but for the most part, he was good, right? Punters, like the unspoken thing in football sometimes, and we don't talk about how much they change field position, or your team's in a tough spot and you're backed up, and all of a sudden it's a great punt, and we go, well, now they're backed up. Holy shit, we didn't get a first down. We didn't move the ball, but our punter – you know, made it seem like we moved the ball and pinned them back there. You know, and there's something to that. I think you look at a lot of the great teams through the history, they had pretty damn good punters. They really did. And it's just one of those where it's like, I don't really want to draft it, right? But I think it is a smart move every now and then.
That's what makes players valuable, obviously, right? It's just like, what is your separation from the next best?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
How much better are you than everyone else? And he really is in a class.
It seems like
he had a lot of practice at Iowa. He certainly had that, and so had a lot of opportunities to hone his craft.
Scoring juggernaut.
Audric Estime, you liked in round five. Already talked about him with the Broncos,
definitely.
Running back out of Notre Dame, 147.
Right.
Also round five, Dolphins edge, Mohamed Kamara?
Yeah, right. Colorado State guy.
He was not on my – oh, you talked about him.
We talked about him a little bit, right? He's a guy that was like – he's not perfect, but there's some, you know, explosion and speed to power that will certainly pop to you when you watch film, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a need there. You know, that pick there, I think he's better than round five. And then you look at them and go, I think that's why they probably overdrafted Chop Robertson to a degree at pick, what was that, 21? I mean, they're worried. How could they not be? They lost Van Ginkle in free agency to the Vikings. Jalen Phillips is coming off an Achilles tear injury, and Bradley Chubb has an ACL injury. Like, neither one of those guys is going to be 100% themselves to start the year.
Right.
So they addressed it with some bodies and some guys that got some real talent and potential.
So we have a comment from Affirmation 93, says the Miami Dolphins should have leaned into their best strength and selected Xavier Worthy out of Texas, although they did get one of my man crushes at wide receiver in round number six, the wide receiver out of Virginia, Malik Washington.
Oh, that was your guy.
Oh, my gosh. I love watching that guy play. I was hoping the Lions would maybe get something
I mean, the assets are the thing here, right? Like, we started off the show. I mean, again, I just think they're going, wait, you know, we're Tyreek Hill's the highest paid receiver in football. Jalen Waddle's really good, and we're going to have to pay him too here soon, right? And we're going to go with the Xavier Worthy thing. I just they had too many other needs,
yes.
Right? There's too many things there. I was more surprised that maybe Moore wasn't, you know, put on the offensive line. I know they signed a lot of value free agents and all of that, but I did expect them to maybe address it a little bit more than they did, than just the second round Patrick Paul pick for the tackle from Houston. But I do like the Chop Robinson. I like the Jalen Wright. I mean, again, he's kind of doubling down with offense there of his speed guys,
yeah.
Just from the running game aspect instead of the receiver aspect.
Can't have enough of those fast running backs, especially when you got a system
offense.
Like they run.
Right.
Lastrin Mann says, I liked what the Dolphins did, but more importantly, I loved how hard you went this year. Slurring by pick one. Absolutely amazing, mate. I love your show and all the film work you do. You weren't slurring, okay?
I might have had like a word in the first pick that I slurred, and I was like, damn, I just slurred one right on the first break. Wait, the first one?
Yeah.
You know?
We both slur when we're sober, so it's like there's not much of a difference.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm not too good with the English language, even when totally sober is right.
Moving into round six, pick 192 to the Seahawks. Got one of your top corners again.
One of my faves.
In DJ James.
I got to call and see what goes on here, right?
Okay.
Something happened. There was something with DJ James. I mean, again... Like, I know he was up there as far as film for other teams, right? I mean, we sat here on the podcast with Devin McCourty. I mean, he said James is one of his favorite corners.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't that far off, right? That was one where, I hadn't really checked up on it or heard anything about him. I got to think there's something there, medical, off the field, something. I mean, corners, now again... You know me, I'm not all about always the grading sites and all of that or whatever else. But corners who run, 4.41 or 4.42
right.
And have one of the best PFF man coverage grades there is in the whole draft, they don't go here unless something happened. There must be something.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested. Maybe I can get that for you by Wednesday and kind of let everybody know.
So do some digging, some dirt.
I'm
looking through his Twitter right now.
Nothing
much I can see so far.
But I do like Seattle's draft. All right. Wouldn't be my favorite, but I like it.
Byron Murphy,
first
pick.
Right.
Christian Haynes, the lineman, offensive lineman out of UConn.
They need an interior lineman. They need a guard. Haynes will fit that. I like that for sure. Tyrese Knight from UTEP, right? You get the tight end AJ Barner from Michigan, who's pretty damn good and can do it all, right? A little well rounded that way. Get another corner from Auburn. In pick five Nehemiah Pritchett, right? You know, so I like those first two picks a lot, and then picks three and four were damn good, and it put me over the top with DJ James, of course.
So Mike and Elma, I don't want to put you in the wrong town. Loved how the Seahawks got their best defensive lineman in the draft with the 16th pick. Also, Schneider seemed to focus on drafting 3-plus-year starters, so guys with some experience and have learned their craft. Morris Bubba says, Seahawks picked 3 guards and 3 corners. Not sure where they all will play. Everyone's saying we need depth, of course, is right, but none of our draft picks will be starters. Seems kind of crazy to me.
Well, I wouldn't... I mean, Byron Murphy's definitely starting. I mean, definitely. Like, who do they... Hold on, let me just pull up the seat. Oh, okay. Okay, it was more of the corners there. I'm sorry. I was kind of, like, looking up my draft
info. Yeah, the 3 guards and the 3 corners. They drafted 3 guards and 3 corners.
Let me make sure I read that question there. The guard certainly has a chance to play. I don't think that's, like, set in stone there. Okay, so I think that's something. Let's see where that goes. Either way, I think it's an area that needs to be addressed, but... I think the guard has a chance to play. I'm looking at that right now. I know Lakin Tomlinson there. Is Anthony Bradford and Stone about starting there? I don't know. And Tomlinson's older and up there in age anyway. So even, with him being there, it's like, hey, a year, maybe two, right? And then Haynes takes over. So I think it makes sense from that standpoint, okay? And then the corner thing, okay? Not so fast, my friend. All right, DJ James can contribute. This is like James, they could find a little thing here. They weren't in love with Tariq Woolen last year. All right, everybody, don't forget about that. Tariq Woolen was benched at one point. They had issues with him. So I don't think it's set in stone that he gets to just start with the new Mike McDonald. Mike McDonald's from the Ravens. He's going to be like, yeah, I want people that compete and are crazy all the time. And I don't think Woolen showed that to them last year, right? So don't count out. DJ James finding a role there. And Nehemiah Pritchett can play. I know we didn't talk about him. He's a little bit bigger. He doesn't change directions quite the way DJ James is, but
yeah,
like a Tariq Woolen on the outside who's fast and long and play that type of game, he can do that. And I think he's there to compete exactly with Tariq Woolen. That would be my guess.
Pretty cool how both those Auburn guys go to the same team together.
It's amazing.
Rarely see something like that. Round six, you also liked Joe Milton to the Patriots, 193.
If you're going to take a quarter, this was my guy to everybody on the radio. Like, if you're going to take a quarterback in the fifth or sixth round, who would it be? I was always going Joe Milton. Joe Milton's the guy. Joe Milton's the only guy I think that is a late round pick that I go, ooh, can actually be something as a starter in the NFL and be like, whoa, he's damn good, right? I think it's honestly a little weird. They got two projects they drafted a quarterback up there in New England, and the one they drafted second is going to be the one that pops everybody's eyes open at the first OTA, because they're going to go, holy shit, his arm, and how big is he? Joe Milton was the only guy in the whole draft process that had some plays that looked like the top quarterbacks in the draft, right? And had a few throws where you went, whoo, like that throw right there, like, only Caleb Williams can make that throw in the draft. Like, only Caleb. And Joe Milton just did, right? So that's where I like it. He's a great early on developmental third stringer, and you hope maybe in a few years he can be your backup, and then maybe he gets a chance to play and he shows you he can play, right? Yeah. That's what you hope there. So I did like that.
Bailey Zappi's time on the Patriots is coming to an end.
Yeah.
It's whittling down here. So if you're the Patriots, though.
Yeah.
All you need now is either Joe Milton or Drake May to be worth the number three overall pick, and you're fine. You have two. You have two shots at it. Right,
it doesn't
here.
Make sense to me.
You have two shots at
again,
it.
Again, you Drake May needs work. They've already said that. Like, that's not the number three pick in the draft to me. That isn't. Now, you know, there's a lot of rumors out there that ownership was like, we're taking Drake May, and the team was like, okay, yes, sir. So, you know, maybe that's the case, but yeah, I don't think we're going to see Drake May in year one. Just going to be Jacoby Brissett. Bailey Zappi will probably hold on to the backup job because they have nobody else as far as...
I mean, that is true.
Right? And I think they're going to just let these guys sit back and kind of enjoy the ride and get used to the NFL life in the
year
one.
Sorry to kick you out of town, Bailey Zappi. Don't leave quite yet.
Yep.
I was premature in that. You liked... in the seventh round, 225 overall, you mentioned it already, to the Chargers, wide receiver out of USC, Brendan Rice.
Yep.
You also liked your Mr. Irrelevant, the last player that you liked in this draft, 240 overall in the seventh round, linebacker for the Panthers, Michael Barrett.
Yeah, I like Michael Barrett. You know, it doesn't blow you away. He's Michigan. He's the other guy.
Oh, my gosh, how did I not know that?
He's right next, 23, 25, right in the middle there.
Because when you watch Junior Colson and you watch Michael Barrett, yes. You go, I like both of them.
I do. I really do. Again, it's more of the old school, true middle linebacker type. It's not going to be wowing athletically, but it's good enough to be on the field and do that. So, I mean, out of all the picks in round seven, that was definitely the one that jumped out to me. Let alone, hey, the Panthers are one of the teams I wrote down on my list here. Like, it wasn't like, ooh, I put a star next to it for I love the draft. Yeah. But I love the idea of... they got some people and some weapons for Bryce Young, and you could tell that was the number one priority of the draft, and they got that accomplished.
So that's what Dai Lehan says. I loved what the Panthers did, surrounding Bryce with playmakers and Xavier Leggett, Jonathan Brooks, Jatavion Sanders, plus trading for Deontay Johnson, signing the two big guards in free agency. Should be a more respectable offense in 2024. And I think that, like, if you've made a mistake, in obviously what happened on the field last year was a lot of mistakes.
Right.
I'm glad that they were aggressive in trying to fix it. You know,
yeah, it's like, that's right.
The patience is like, they got. It doesn't seem like David Tepper is the guy who has a whole lot of patience anyway.
No.
So that was probably
especially
the mandate.
Especially since he walked into the restaurant this weekend
and took a man's head off.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
On Friday, they had the video out, right? He walked into the restaurant that said, let the coach and GM pick, and he walked into the restaurant and asked them who put the sign up.
Yeah.
Like, come on, David Tepper. Like, come on, don't do that to yourself. Don't do that to yourself.
Yeah, I don't think he has the temperament to be an NFL owner.
He's got a little too bothered or just gets a little too worried about that type of stuff. He shouldn't do that. But, Xavier Leggett is a weapon. I mean, he's a weapon. He's Debo Samuel-ish, like we talked about. He was part of that group we talked about. Could go at the end of the first round, right? So that's great. Brooks, right? Jonathan Brooks, he's big play. He's kind of a weapon, too. Again, you give him a seam, he can go 70 to the house. Trayvon Wallace, a really good athletic middle linebacker. And then you get Jatavion Sanders, the Texas tight end, who, I think, was clearly the best, second best pass catching tight end behind Brock Bowers in this draft.
Yeah, it was just some of the other stuff that.
Yeah, needs some help in the blocking department.
Room to be desired.
Right.
Room to be desired?
Room to be desired.
Is that right?
I think so.
Some room to. No, that's not right. There's some.
Leave some room to be desired. I think you're right.
There's things.
There's more to be desired. I think there's room to be desired. I thought there was.
All right. Sometimes
I desire certain people in a room.
Bengals leave room to be desired with their pick? So football pick says Jermaine Burton equals bust. Amarius Mims equals obvious bust. Bengals draft equals F. I need to find a new favorite team. So friggin' disappointing.
Why at football picks? Why? Like, what don't you like about those picks? I don't understand that. Like, Jermaine Burton can be day one substitute for Tyler Boyd. Like, ready. And more explosive. Jermaine Burton in third round is a fucking steal. Chris Jenkins is, like, one of the safest picks of the draft. Like, definitely your starting D tackle in the next 2 years, you know, if not this year. But either way, he's going to play a lot. I love Amarius Mims. I want to know more from you at football picks. Please respond to these comments, all right? I want to know, why don't you love a giant human being that no one can get around at right tackle? Like, why? Why don't you like the aspect of that you're going to have the biggest fucking O-line in the history of football in front of Joe Burrow, who's been hurt a lot? I like their draft. I really did. I thought it, you know, one, Mims addressing for the future. You can't trust Trent Brown to be healthy this year and where he's going to be. We know they lost DJ Reader in free agency. I know they got, you know, Zach Carter at D-tackle. B.J. Hill are still there, but you add that to Chris Jenkins is great. And Burton is a pro. He's ready. If Burton was on a team that was a little bit better at throwing the football, if it was past year's Alabama where maybe a two or one of those quarterbacks were there with the other receivers, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he got unlucky this year. He got on the Alabama team for the first time ever, didn't have five first-round receivers and a quarterback that was really damn good, right? Quarterback was an athlete who was learning how to throw and play in the pocket, right? But I think if he's on one of those past Alabama teams, like, Burton is, like, going in the top 35, top 40 picks. I really like Jermaine Burton. I do. And I like McKinley Jackson as well, the D-tackle from Texas A&M.
Yep.
He is athletic, little ball of muscle moving around there. So, yeah, I was a fan of the Bengals. Don't switch your team at football picks.
Yeah.
You're going to be good. You have Joe Burrow.
If you're going to switch, like,
you're
long
way,
ago.
You're way right? late you're, now. You're in, you're hang in there now,
you're in way
guy.
Too deep.
Yes.
So to be clear, these teams that we're talking about from here on out for a little while are teams that you also liked in their draft. And so we'll go to the Commanders here. I won the mum, said to you, love my Commanders taking the best quarterback and not being slaves to need, meaning great value picks, and Newton and Sainristil. Love Sainristil. No top O-line prospects drop, but this is a multi-year rebuild. Unlike recent years, I didn't have to scroll too far down the best players available lists.
Yeah, definitely.
The Commanders.
I mean, hey, we did, you know, favorite teams or favorite picks for each round, right? The first mm-hmm. thing I sent Pete were my teams that I liked and what they did in the draft. You saw that too. I sent that text.
Yeah,
that was the first thing, and the Commanders were on that list from day one. I mean, across the board, yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. Of course, we like the quarterback. We know that. Jerzon Newton, right? Another guy where, hey, you got to play the Eagles. Cowboys pretty good up front, right? Giants even have a potential maybe to be good up front. We'll see. But, you know, either way, Newton, you know, add him there. He's too talented. I get it. Now, I know they got Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne and him. You know, but I think they'll find ways to get all three on the field at the same time. Jonathan Allen's a guy that could play defensive end, too. So they could maybe put Newton at D tackle if they're going to play, you know, a little bit of a 3-4 hybrid up front. There's things that Jerzon Newton can do there. But Sainristil, like you talked about, the corner from Michigan, awesome football player. Don't be shocked if he's the best nickel in football in 3 years from now. That's what kind of talent he has. So Ben Sanou.
Sinat.
I think it's Sinat.
Wow, Ben Sanou, though. You kind of went with the French pronunciation.
I went with the French. Yeah, it's you know, it looks French to me.
It does,
kind of. You know, but he's definitely one of the best tight ends. He might be really the second best overall tight end in the draft. Jadeveon Sanders might have been the better pass version. This guy's good at the pass and can block in the run, right? So they got a good pick there, right? I love Luke McCaffrey to go along with it. Dominique Hampton in the fifth round. The Washington safety is a good all-around football player. So, yeah, all in all, I thought they hit a lot of needs and a lot of really good quality football players.
You also like the Buccaneers, and so did 7th Evan. Love the way Jason Light and the Bucs consistently stuck to best player available while addressing crucial needs, serious help at O-line and receiver, plus some real Todd Bowles guys for the defense. Light has crushed two drafts in a row, and no one talks about it.
No, you're right. He doesn't. You know, it's Graham Barton at center or guard or whatever they want to play him.
Yeah.
Like man, physical, whatever. We know they needed another offensive lineman, certainly. That's an unbelievable pick at 26. Braswell, right, second round.
Edge out of Alabama.
Yeah, just a big, physical, really good football player. It's not going to be 16 sacks a year, but he could be your starting defense end for a long time and be really good at everything and always have 8 or 9 sacks, right? Tyke Smith, the safety from Georgia, wasn't one of my favorites, but got attitude, going to come down and tackle. Right, Jalen McMillan, another one of those Washington guys, is well-rounded, can do it all at receiver. And then the Bucky Irving at running back, right? He was, you know, he was up there for me as the running backs I liked in this whole process there. So I thought they did a really good job. But that Barton, Braswell, Tyke Smith right off the bat, top three picks there, I thought were big for the Buccaneers.
I'm curious about the Rams here.
Yeah.
Because they're here in the section which indicates to me that you liked
yeah.
what they did.
Yeah.
But they didn't necessarily take – I guess they did take some of the guys that you like. But here, let's get a couple comments here.
I know where you're going here.
Mark Floyd.
Yeah.
I really liked the Jared Verse pick for the Rams, but I hated that we passed on Quinyon Mitchell. Hard to not take the best corner in the draft if he falls to 19. So I think you would have liked their draft a little bit better. I mean, I don't know if that's a desperate need for them. Probably.
They could use a corner. I think they have some young corners that they like there.
Okay.
And I don't think they're as much die-hard man-to-man football team as maybe they were back in the day.
Sure.
Okay? So I think that would probably be the biggest thing with them.
But they go Jared Verse first,
yes.
And they go Braden Fisk second. Now,
yeah.
Two guys that you did talk about and you liked, but you also were probably lower on them than other people.
Definitely. I mean, I had no problem with Verse there at, you know, what was that, 20, 19, right? You
19.
Know, I kind of thought he would be like 23, somewhere in that range, right? So that's good, and they have a real need, right? The big thing is, for me, with them was they needed front seven football players, and they got that, right? And Braden Fisk, yeah, I worry about his ability to anchor versus double teams, right, and all of that. That was my issue. The athlete, the specimen, the disruptor, I think they'll know how to use him a little bit, and they'll teach him the other things. But Aaron Donald wasn't famous for his anchor either. Right?
Because yeah.
They're going to get him to play a speed game, shoot this gap, slant here, do this, and just blow stuff up that way. So that's where I like that. And then you get a Blake Corum, right, to go along with
Kyron Williams.
Kyron Williams, excuse me, I was going to call it Kyron White. Cameron Kitchens, physical safety from Miami, that'll work. And then I like the Brennan Jackson, the Washington State edge guy. You know,
yeah.
I'm not sure he's definitely going to be a starter, but he's going to play. He's going to help you out. So that's where I like that Rams draft. I think it was some real needs. And the front seven, I think, was a thing they had to bolster. Depth, talent, overall, everything. And I think they did that.
Once again, I'm not a draft value expert,
yeah.
But I do think there are some people that think that they gave up a little too much to move up in the second round. I think they gave up a future second round
pick. They might have.
For
they
Braden
might've.
Fisk there. So
Fisk
might have been
was
a bit
viewed
of an overpay.
Higher than I viewed him.
Okay.
Okay. That I know. That is something I definitely – Fisk, I think some people thought might be one of the cluster of guys that could go at the end of the first round, really. I talked to some GMs before the draft because I asked about Fisk, and they're like, yeah, I like Fisk. And I said, you don't worry about his anchor. No, we did it all. We think his anchor's okay.
Did you watch the plays where he was pushed seven yards downfield?
You know, right, exactly right. But I think it's the athleticism, the disruption, the strength, the size of the guy, the versatility. That's where he's looked at as safe, I think, a little bit. It's like, okay, we're not going to try to keep him out of those double team, he's got to anchor situations, right? We'll try to keep him in spots where he can be athletic and really fuck plays up that way.
All right, one more team we're going to talk about. We've saved the best for last.
Boo!
So hold on. Just don't say any much, but you didn't Love the Lions?
I liked it.
You liked it, didn't love it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's hear from the other people then first. Matea Souza says, just talk straight Lions football. They killed it. Rick ain't here. Love the Lions addressing obvious needs and strengthening up the defensive back room. I feel like Brad Holmes can do no wrong. I can see the vision for every draft pick. My favorite is Sione Vaki. And then that is what 313 Spark says. I'm happy with literally every pick the Lions made, but I heard they want Vaki as a special teams and running back instead of safety. I echo those sentiments. I think Brad Holmes crushed it, traded up for many of the picks here. Screw draft value. As I said, I'm not an expert in this, so whatever. I don't care. They're much better in the defensive secondary than they were last year with getting Terrion Arnold and Ennis Rakestraw, your number two safety.
Yeah.
In the class. I think they probably see him as a corner here. But just right off the bat, their defensive backs are much better than they were a year ago.
I think they're just looking at it like just, you know, like you kind of explained it, just good secondary people, right? And Rakestraw, yeah, Rakestraw to me, I mean, the great thing is it's like C.J. Gardner-Johnson, right? That's who I've compared him to. That's what he is. He's that nickel slot, you know, safety hybrid type of football player who's going to bring attitude and swag to your team. You just worry about him being a little bit not big enough to handle the way he throws his body around, right? That's what we kind of talked about in the process. He thinks he's 255 with a sledgehammer head, and he's not, and he's got to be worried about that. I don't dislike any of these picks. You just know I'm not in love with Terrion Arnold at 24. Like, so many times as you questioned already so far in this draft and go, well, you could have traded down and got him. Here's one where I go, I want to go, why? I wonder who they thought was going to draft Terrion Arnold. That would be my question. That would be it. But, like, as far as you guys needing secondary players, and I said this at the time, I know he wasn't one of my top five corners, I'd love to have Terrion Arnold on my football team, right? He's a really good football player. I don't think he can play on the outside, right? That's my biggest thing. I think he's truly a nickel type of football guy, right? But either way, secondary guys were needed, and you know I'm not mad at that for that.
I think there maybe was some thought. So the Packers picked right
maybe
after
the Packers,
them,
right?
And then the Bucks picked after them. So I don't know if there was.
I don't. Maybe
a
the Packers
there.
Were part of that conversation. I certainly
Packers
thought about
sure.
DB for the Packers. So that's probably what they were worried about.
They also took a player, an offensive tackle out of British Columbia, Giovanni Manu, who is a developmental guy, but he's like 300 and I think 50 pounds.
Something like that.
6'7",
right.
Ran under a 5-second 40-yard dash. Doesn't know much about playing the tackle position, but took him and then got Makai Wingo and Christian Mahogany, who were both of all the players that they drafted, those were the two best values they got. Now, they fell maybe like almost 100 spots more than they were supposed to fall,
right.
Which makes me happy. But at the same time, like I mentioned earlier, makes me a little worried that there's an issue why they fell.
Well, yeah, there probably is or whatever else. But Mahogany's got traits there. You can go like, yeah, would I be shocked if he was a starting guard there, you know, 2-3 years from now? Absolutely not. I don't think that's crazy thought there, right? Your guy, Manu, to me is like, see, this it's almost like the Eagles with the Jalix Hunt pick, where they're like, wait, our team's pretty good. We can take fuck you, we might hit gold here with this guy. And I think that's what it is. You're looking at a chance where you go, we might be drafting Jordan Mailata.
Yeah.
Right? That's what they're looking at it, going, wait, we could have Penei Sewell and then Jordan Mailata, a.k.a. Giovanni Manu, over here at left tackle. And I think it's worth that, right? There's something there they've seen to go, wait, this guy this big, the way he moves, all of this, right? Ooh, we think he's tough. He'll work a little. That's all you need at some time. That's all you need. Like that's enough right there to be like, well, I'm sold. Okay, I'm perked up. I'm listening, right? So, yeah, and I trust this group to kind of have the eye to find those kind of guys, right? There's just too many ex-football people and smart football people in that building that kind of have that gut feel instinct for that type of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know much about him. I can't really say other than that. Well, other than I trust them, and he's a big fucker, and I like that.
Yeah, Manu or Manu, no one knows. Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, the only two people from America who have talked to this guy. Actually, that's not true. I think there were like 13 teams at the pro day that he had out there in British Columbia. But welcome to the Lions. Welcome to the team. So that wraps up the teams that you thought killed it.
Yeah.
But you know who else killed it?
Who's that?
The homies. 622 entries into our contest of predict the top 10. And so we have the numbers for it. The numbers are in. Pete has accumulated them and calculated them. the most correct entries by pick. So congratulations, 100% of you, all 622.
Good.
Picked Caleb Williams to
we
go
got
number
no
one.
No idiots listening to this pod. I like that.
So 94% had Jaden Daniels going number two. Okay, all right, good job. Marvin Harrison, four. All right, that's interesting. Drake May, you guys, 61%. You were listening to the podcast. You're like, can they really do it? But look at this. 1% of the homies had Michael Penix going eight to the Falcons.
So that's like three people out of the 622, basically, like three? So
what would that be?
That's incredible,
six,
though.
Maybe.
That really is.
Terry Fontenot is confirmed listener of the Unbuttoned podcast.
That's very impressive. I would bet you this is the year where more people hit on the mock draft than ever before, right? I mean, I know I hit on 1, 2, 4, 5,
well, you hit
6.
Oh, well, yeah, on your mock draft. But, yeah. But during the draft, as it was
as
happening
draft,
before,
right.
You hit on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
I think we
six,
went all the way to Atlanta.
Seven.
We said it, right? Yeah, because after I let my mock out and I talked to a few more people leading up to the draft, right,
yeah.
And us doing the mock on a Monday, yeah, I kind of got a better feel for the live show on Thursday night.
So no one picked both Michael Penix to go number 8 and J.J. McCarthy to go number 10. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, that would have been.
1% picked both of those to happen. They were not the same people. So the perfect entries. Did we get a perfect entry? Does Chris have to pay anyone $100? If we stopped at one, yes. You'd have to pay them all, 622 of them. 94% of you were still alive after the second pick. The third pick dropped some of you. You're still 50% after pick number four.
Look at the Chargers, though. Nobody wanted Joe Alt.
I bet everyone put Malik Nabers there.
I mean, they're getting way too much crap there. Now, people called for that pick number 5 for Malik Nabers. As I told you, that was a thing. It was a real thing. I know that. 100%. Teams called the Chargers for pick 5 because it was for Malik Nabers, because everyone knew the Giants were going to go Nabers at 6. You know, but again, they got a guy that they believe in, and Alt's the man, and he fits what Jim Harbaugh wants to do. I don't know why everybody's so mad at that pick.
So J.C. Latham, 25 of you were still like, oh my God, this really could happen. And then Michael Penix went, and everyone was like, well, there goes that.
See you later.
So 25 entries went the furthest before getting busted. Now, 5 of the 25 that were perfect through Michael Penix also correctly picked Rome Odunze to the Bears at 9, giving them 8 total correct picks. So shouts out. We're giving shouts out, multiple shouts out, to Charles Handley, Colby, no last name, Khalil Baker, Nigel Bryant, and Zachary Atkins.
What up, guys? What up, Charles, Colby, Khalil, Nigel, and Zachary? Way to go. 8 out of 10, that's pretty strong. It really is.
That's not bad.
Yeah. I'm pissed I didn't do the Odunze at 9. I kind of went like, they'll go defense here.
I know.
That was one that pissed me off.
You,
like,
you were playing
it was like
hero.
So obvious. Yeah. I was like, you know, like, nah, that won't really happen.
You were playing hero ball.
Yeah, right.
Our
exactly.
One winner last year was busted at pick number 6. So our homies did better. They're getting better each and every year. So honorable mention, too, to Daniel Trummert, who missed J.C. Latham, but still got 8 total picks correct when he got Odunze and McCarthy.
What did he do at 8? What did he, 7? What did he do? I mean, we told you it was going to be the leftover of the pick 5. It was either going to be Latham or I'm so disappointed, Daniel.
Yeah, we told you, Daniel. We did tell you.
I told you. You were so awesome, and that was an easy one. That was a slam dunker.
Yeah, Daniel, come on,
Daniel. Good job, Daniel. Ready to go.
Just got yelled at on the podcast for doing well. All right, that's the draft. But what I want to tell you, though,
what do you want to tell me?
That was a big event that we've been preparing for months. For you've been looking at dudes in a barn for a long time, but there's another big event coming up here on NBC.
Speaking
you know what
of
that
dudes
is?
In a barn,
3-year-olds in a barn here, their horses. It's a Kentucky Derby coming up this Saturday, 2:30 is on NBC, also streaming on Peacock. The 150th Kentucky Derby. So it's a milestone. They've renovated the place, $200 million to make a new paddock there. So we'll be on USA Network the day before. You got the Kentucky Oaks. We'll be on at noon, I think, on Saturday on USA Network.
Right.
That's where Ahmed gets to host.
Right.
And then when we go over to NBC at 2:30, Mike Tirico says, Ahmed, I hope you had fun hosting. It's my turn now.
It's time for the starting quarterback now.
Yes.
Now, do you get to be a part of the show still?
I
you
will.
Going to go so run then, on the track
exactly.
again and show me how deep it is and all that?
I will be doing some things on the track.
Right.
I will be back with the 3-year-olds in the barn. I will probably not drink a mint julep, which, by the way, I've had that. Not a great tasting drink.
No, overrated?
Not my cup of tea.
Okay.
Not your
cup of julep.
Cup of julep.
Yeah.
So I will be involved.
Okay.
I will be there. I'll make my pick during the Derby at some point.
Are you
going to
be here for this Wednesday? You're not here this Wednesday.
I'm not. No,
you're
leaving tomorrow.
You're leaving tomorrow.
I'm leaving tomorrow.
I mean, how many fucking days of lead up do you need to watch horses run around a circle?
I know. It's a big show.
I mean, holy crap.
It's like you get this is what happens. Lindsay Shanzer is our producer for it. She does an awesome job, and she's got it all scheduled out so far. And so I've seen the schedule.
Yeah.
It's like you get there. And you're basically, you're meeting, you're here, you're looking over tape, you're doing affiliate interviews because we try to get the word out that the Kentucky Derby's happening.
Right.
It's just like from the time that I get there to the time the show's over, it's just like my pits will be sweating.
Yeah.
Like I can't.
Well, that was the last thing I was going to say.
What?
I mean, first off, to all the homies out there, like take pictures of Ahmed if his pits are sweating.
Yes.
Let's show that on the Monday pod. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Wear a good deodorant.
You're right.
Get on your game.
I got to do that.
Okay? Because I'm going to be watching for it. I'm gonna put it on social media this time.
Yeah.
I'm going to circle it with one of those yellow lines and be like, look at this right here.
Luckily, I'll have a jacket on, so if I am sweating through that, that's going to be even worse.
It's impressive. That definitely needs to be pointed out. If you're going through the jacket, I got to point it out then.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, but I will miss the pod.
All right. We'll let you go. For this, we'll let you go. We know. Yeah. I love the Kentucky Derby. To me, it is one of my favorite non-football sporting events of the year.
It's a fun event. It's a fun day.
Like the Masters, it's a little bit of like that kickoff to like the spring and summer, and you're just like, oh, it's here. It's finally here. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Kick some ass. I'll be watching.
Thank you.
I definitely will. All right, everybody. You know where to find us. Thanks for everything today. Thanks for the questions. I hope you enjoyed the little breakdown of the draft. You got anything more draft-related, send it in. Connor Rogers will be here on Wednesday. All right. Subscribe, rate, and review. But we will do more draft analysis, hit on the big news of the NFL over the next few days. That'll be Wednesday. Everybody be good out there. Have a good, nice next few days. Something like that. See you later. Peace out, homies. Clap it up.
I hope your next few days are nice.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.